petition number 21019-2.
Jack Sinclair, Realto. You were just talking about the American vehicle.
And we did meet with American vehicles for the first time. We had one similar to our AEC Matador, which was used to tow the 3.7 guns and other heavy equipment. And they were petrol, as opposed to the Matador being diesel. And we also met 3-ton vehicles, Chevrolet and Dodge, which were American-style vehicles, as opposed to our own British Bedfords that we had been driving before.
And so you moved to Loughborough in Leicestershire, you said.
Leicestershire.
What was the name of this unit that you moved to?
It was the supply unit. I was still with the transport company, but we were part now of supply unit. And that was, the purpose of that was to supply the rations and petrol to the unit M&B02.
What experiences did you have there?
Well, they were also getting ready to move off overseas, and again, referring back to keeping mum, we were issued there with the big helmets, the sun helmets. Now, walking through Loughborough by now we were getting around to winter, carrying sun helmets, again, didn't seem to be very security-minded in a sense. But that was similar, I think, to the previous one at Leon C. It was the area where they did mobilise. So all the locals knew that when the units moved in, they were not long before they were moving out. And we did. We moved off then. We went down to just by Bristol docks and loaded up on the ships down there and went off then to the Middle East.
From Bristol?
I'm just trying to think of the port that's just outside that we...
Portishead? Avonmouth?
Avonmouth. Avonmouth is where we actually embarked for that particular one. We'd gone down by train from Loughborough and off we went. We called in at Freetown on the way just for getting water and other few supplies. We didn't go ashore there at all, we just called in. But we had, of course, on the way, passed through some of the Spanish islands, and it was quite surprising to see the lights on all the time. They didn't have blackouts there, obviously, because they were not concerned with the war at that particular time. And we did then go down to the Cape, and part of the convoy went into Cape Town, and we went into Durban, where we spent 5 days onshore just to get our land legs back again and get some different rations and things like that and to re-equip the ships before we went up to Egypt. And we landed then in Egypt at the transit camps, as we call them, in Kassassin area. And that was covered in tented camps where all the units then obviously moved through before they went wherever they were going to go in the rest of Egypt. And we stayed there for quite some while. We then did the usual things. Every camp had a cinema. If I remember right, there were Shaftos. So we had that amusement. And then, of course, we did our own amusement ourselves. We arranged football between the units. And we, again, had athletic meetings, which we managed to be quite successful at again. And we were then moved to Sicily when the Sicilian operation went, and part of the supply unit actually moved with them just after the commandos landed to actually help to supply. As we said, that's what they were there for, petrol and food. But others of us stayed behind because there wasn't the room and there wasn't the need at the time for our services. And we joined up later on. We did go to Sicily, and on the way, remember, we called into to Malta and stayed there in the Grand Harbour for the night, and that was the first time I'd seen Malta. Then we went off to Sicily and landed at just by a little place called Augusta, which was a port there. obviously that was the one that we were going to maintain, but there was no damage to the port. So we'd come all that way, really, and apart from the supply unit, which did quite a good job, there wasn't a lot of work for us to do. But I remember when we did first land, we were just outside, sent just outside the port to what we would call a farm, which is a vineyard and the rest of it, and we set up our camp there, just outside. And there was a bit of enemy activity just after that, aircraft, and we then, from our position just outside Augusta, had a sort of grandstand view, really, of the aircraft attacking the harbour, without any danger to ourselves. And also there, whilst I was there, I did pick up a set of dog tags, things that we used to wear around our necks with our name and number on them, and it was Jimmy Twigger's, my first section sergeant. So he had also gone through that same vineyard, but by this time he was with 4-1 Commando. He had gone on and volunteered for that, obviously. So he had, when the unit had landed in Sicily, he had used the same vineyard that we used, which was rather peculiar that I should pick up his tags of anybody else's. It'd be my first section sergeant, but he didn't last long, unfortunately. Salerno, he was killed at Salerno, Jimmy. But we then moved down into Augusta itself, took over billets down there, and we had quite a reasonable time. We had a visit from Gracie Fields, came to visit us and performed at the open air theatre there. And our general was called back to England, and then he returned, and we noticed there that we had a change, we were going to have anyway, a change of headgear, because we'd worn the side hats all the time. But he came back with a blue berry, quite a smart affair, and a red patch on the left hand side for the badges. And this obviously was going to be the new headgear Royal Marines for the military side. And he also had news that we were going home. So the unit was then split. Part of them that were required, the artillery, the ACAC and those sort of units, moved to Italy. But the rest of us were then due to come back, because by now it was 44, early part of 44, and units or troops were needed back home to get ready for D-Day. So we then, I remember we had a medical. Well, we had to walk past the medical officer. He was stood in the doorway, and we walked past, and he said, fit or unfit? He said I was unfit. Now, I did have a cold, I'll admit, but he said unfit. So when you think we were going to have a lovely cruise back to Blighty from Sicily, fortnight, we were going to have a spot of leave, and in that time, the cold, if it was just a cold, would all have gone. But that didn't count, I was unfit. So when we got back to England, we dispersed again, and the ones who were fit disappeared. We didn't see them anymore. They went and they trained then for commando service or landing craft service. The rest of us, we invalids, moved up to Scotland. We were there in Renfrew, and we were up there for a little while, and eventually we were drafted back to Wales, to Towyn. There was a series of camps in Towyn that were training camps, and they were pre-commando training. So we must have recovered. We moved down there and we did pre-training for commando service.
What did that involve?
That was mainly, again, a lot of marching, a lot of extensive climbing. Cader Idris was the mountain down there, and we had to climb up, or not climb in that sense, but we had to go up the footpaths up and down these various climbs, a lot of small arms, and quite a bit of rope training, climbing up ropes and going across horizontal lines of ropes, where you would hook your back foot over the rope and then pull yourself along with your arms. And that idea was for river crossing. You would pull yourself across and then drop off, presumably dry the other side. There was quite a bit of that. And several of us, senior NCOs, were also sent to Clanberris, South Snowdonia, where there was an army specialist course for fieldcraft and small arms. And that was really extensive and really flat out. And we was there for 21 days, and you had one full day and one half day off duty.
Did you not already know about small arms?
Yes, but we continually, you had been pressed on small arms, which a fairly important part of the training that we were going to meet later on, and it came in all the time. But you was being trained now for section NCO duty in a unit. You was going to be in command in active service, really active. I mean, we were on active service anyway, but it had been more or less a holiday in that sense. We hadn't seen the enemy apart from prisoners, and we weren't up to then really involved in the active war as such, but that was coming. So NCOs were put through really strict training, and the 21 day course at Clanberris was really hard work. They put you through it there, and I remember our sergeant, if you didn't get wet during the day, you finished up going through a river before you went back to billets. So every day you was wet. And that then we did include Snowdon. We had at the end of the course, we had six from each platoon had to race up Snowdon from what they call Watkins Pass up to the hotel that was at the top of Snowdon, and then down the railway line back to Clanberris. So that was the final bit of that side of it. And we also had to do a full day exercise where we had four different operations to carry out. The first one was a lake crossing to represent landing by boat, which we did, and then climb the little hill that was the other side. And each one of the four, you had a different job to do. You was either the section sergeant, or you was a machine gunner, or you was the rifleman who did the final assault. It was different for the four particular exercises. And on one of them, I was with a chap, corporal from one of the Sussex regiments, and our job was the final assault on the enemy position. And we charged in as we thought was the enemy position, but as we arrived, so did some bullets. And they whipped up alongside us, because on all these exercises, live ammunition was fired at you. But normally on what we call fixed lines, the guns, Bren guns usually, would be fixed. But I'm not sure what these bullets were intended, whether we were at the wrong position or whether someone was firing on the wrong position, but we didn't wait to find out. But nobody, when we did a little O group after each of these exercises, no one mentioned this, and we didn't mention it either. So we were just lucky to get away with not being hit by the... But apparently on any exercise where they use live ammunition, they were allowed casualties, because ammunition is not strictly always accurate in itself. It could wander off a little bit. So I think they were allowed a percentage, but we were lucky in that side, we weren't hit. Nor did we suffer any on the course, apart from a few injuries in the sense of where you fell over or where you, that type of injury, but nothing in the way of ammunition. But that was a really, Clanberris was quite a course. And that was the only time in my service that you could eat as much as you wanted. But what you took, you had to eat. But there was no restriction then on the food, because the amount of and we did also, of course, do a bit there about demolition work and learning how to disarm the enemy's booby traps and that type of thing.
How do you do that?
Well, we had the instructor there would go through the build-up of the booby trap normally, and then you would then trace it back, and you would have to know to a degree which part of it you could dislodge, which one was the safe one, rather than sending it off by cutting the wrong wire or something like that. But they were very, fairly simple ones. We weren't engineers, so we didn't go into the really difficult. They were only the simple booby traps that we were concerned with in that particular one.
What are your next memories?
After that, then we went back to Gibraltar camp, having finished, and we were due to start our commando training. So we were marched out of the camp, with the band and the drum major in the front with his mace and all the rest of it, down to Towyn and off then to Scotland to Achnacarry. Spearn Bridge was the station that we went to, and we arrived there the following morning, saw the transport outside and thought, oh good, but the transport was only for our kit, the kit bags. We had a 6 mile march to Achnacarry Castle as an introduction to commando training, and then we joined the marine training unit there, and we spent 6 weeks at Achnacarry. Again, back to the usual business of lots of small arms, lots of unarmed combat, lots of physical marches. We used to do what they called a speed march in there, which was run so far, walk so far, run so far. And that would be build up 3 miles, 6 miles, 10 miles. And usually after one of those, you'd be back on an open range where we would fire at tiles rather than the military targets. And that was to get you recovered, see how quick your recovery rate was from being under a bit of pressure. So that the idea was, in the main, that you did recover quickly so that when you came to the end of a march or anything else, it didn't take you long to get back to normality, which you would need if you was going into action. You would want to be back with under control, the body under control, as quickly as possible. And a lot of rope work was involved there, and we did what they call the death slide, which was the rope fixed to a tree, higher one side than the other. And we used to have what we called toggles, which was a rope with a wooden bar at each end, which you could then slip over the rope coming down from the tree, hold onto it, and slide down across the river. But of course, you had to be a bit careful when you reached the other side, because you were travelling a little bit fast then with the tree in front. But that was known as the death slide. And we also did a lot of the crossing the river on the horizontal ropes. But of course, they didn't stay horizontal. They dipped a little, and by the last few yards, you was going up quite a little incline, so it was quite a pull on the last few yards. And we also did some rock climbing there, and the abseiling is very popular now. But in our day, we didn't have any of the metal clips that they use now. We just had the rope, which we put under our legs and back up again, and held by hand. And you jump back and let the rope go, and then when you came back into the cliff, or the castle as we used to use there, we used to use the Achnacarry Castle for that, you would then grip the rope and take off again from there. But we did a fair little bit of that, and we were introduced to rock climbing. We had a fair amount of it at Achnacarry, plenty of rocks around there which was able to practice on. So we had fairly extensive training there, 6 weeks. And then we went from there to the holding operational commando at Wrexham, and that was where the new recruits, ourselves, and the wounded who'd recovered would then return back to HOC. And our object there was to await drafts. So each morning we'd be down the drafting board to see. And strangely, I mean, this was round, when was it? Clamberis, that was when D-Day took place, the 6th of June. That's when we heard of it there. And of course, we were then thinking that the war was going to finish fairly quickly after that. So by the time we got to, done our commando training, another 6 weeks, then to Wrexham, we thought that, you know, there was not much left. But they had slowed down then, obviously, in France. They didn't move very far for a while, did they, after June, July and August. But that was in our thoughts that the war was going to be over. So no drafts at all for us. It seemed rather strange, because we were all keen and no drafts. So we had the option of going on some courses, and two or three of us decided we'd go to Ringway, Manchester, for a parachute course. So we sent off up there. As we were commando trained, we didn't have to do the pre-para training. We just did the RAF training strictly on parachutes. And we had a fortnight's training there, which we did 8 jumps, 2 from static balloons and 6 from the aircraft, which were Hamdens that we went through the floor on those particular ones. And you had to be careful there, because with the parachute on your back, you'd sit in the opening and you had to lift yourself off so that the parachute cleared the hole. If you didn't, it would tended to hit on the floor of the aircraft and would throw you across the hole, and you would hit your chin on the other side of the opening. And they were very keen to tell you that. And there was one chap at Ringway who was walking around with a great bandage round the front of his chin, but we rather fancied that that was just to illustrate the point that when you went out from the floor of the aircraft, you did lift yourself up into the centre of the hole before dropping through the hole. Well, it's a habit of mine. So we also, of course, were given 2 shillings per day extra whilst we were at Ringway, which in those days was quite a little. The paras were obviously paying that, because that was part of their duty and training. Once they were qualified, they were on 2 shillings a day. But we got it for the fortnight that we were there. Well, 28 bob was a little fortune to us then. But back to Wrexham, still nothing. So I decided I would volunteer for the Special Air Service. That's been with my badge on. So I was before the commanding officer, who was a Colonel Royal Marines, and the request was read out, and he said, none of my Royal Marines joined the SAS. Request not granted. They about turned quick march off. So that was that. A few days later, my draft came through. But it was back to Acne Carry as an instructor. Well, I'd never been to a unit yet as a commando, and I find myself back at Acne Carry as an instructor. So then I joined the Army Commando, Hayden Commando, and carried out duties with the troops as they came through. So this time I was putting them through their paces rather than being put through the paces. And this went on for about 3 months. And we had quite a good time. I remember there was one period where there was no one in Hayden Commando to train. So we had what we called an NCO's carder, where we trained ourselves, where you had to go. And it was on the parade ground there under the RSM, who was a guard's RSM. And he sent one of the chaps as far away as he could, right back across the other side of the parade, to drill the squad that was stood there. And after a while, the RSM said, take the notice, take the notice. So the poor lad's yelling his head off at the other side of the parade, and the squad stood still. Then the RSM said, carry on. So we then took up his orders, one of which was to turn about. So we turned about, and now we're heading out of camp. So we're going along, and you can hear him behind us there, bringing us back again, turning us. And someone in the squad said, take the notice. And the whole squad marched out of camp. The poor lad, the sergeant, was left by the naffy doorway there, trying to screech to get his squad back, and we was steaming down the main road out of camp. But we soon turned around and came back in, and the RSN took it in the spirit in which it was done, as a bit of a skylark, and didn't chase it around too much. But that was one little, because the squad there would consist of NCOs of all regiments, because the commando, of course, did include all the regiments in the British Army, although they were under one unit. They all wore their own regimental badges. There wasn't a special badge for commandos. They wore their own badge on the Green Beret. So that in that squad, there was quite a number of NCOs from different regiments. And then one of the early part of the year, a squad had just joined for training, and they were off on their first march round the Loch Linney and Loch Arkaig, and back. They used to come then over between two of the hills, through a saddle in the hills, back to camp, which was a stroll really, just to get them used to it. But unfortunately on that one, the snow took over. And whilst they were coming up the hill to come to the saddle, they were really in trouble. So we then had to sort of do an emergency route, go out and bring them back in, help them back up to the camp, and lay on emergency operation in the camp in case any of them were suffering, but it wasn't too bad. But we did a little operation for them, the ones who were not involved in that particular walk round the locks. But then, we're now sort of a couple of weeks into January, and I'm on CO's orders. What for, I didn't know. It just appeared on the orders there that I was on COs. So the following morning, I had to see the chap, Colonel, which was Vaughan, was the Colonel then, and he was well known throughout all the commandos because he'd been up at Acne Carry a long time, having served with two or three of the units as an active service commando. So he was pretty well known. Charlie Vaughan, he was known by everybody. But he was the CO up there, and I marched in by the RSM, and he said, the Colonel said, do you know Colonel Gray, 4-5, Commander? So I said, not personally, sir, but only by name. I don't know him. He said, well, he sent for you to join his unit. So I looked at the Colonel, and you know, I wondered why he would send personally for me, because I didn't know him, and I didn't know anyone in 4-5, not at the time. But anyway, he said, you can either stay here with me and carry on your instructing, or you can join 4-5. So I said, well, with due respect, sir, I'll join 4-5. So that meant going from Acne Carry to Bexhill on Sea, Sussex, because that's where the unit were at that particular time. And I wondered, when I was coming down from Glasgow, should I go from Glasgow via Sheffield and sort of rearrange my kit, because by now, having 3 years of service and being a PTI with the PT gear as well, I had accumulated a fair amount of kit, some of which I could leave off. But I decided against it and went down from the Manchester side, from Glasgow down to London, and London down to Bexhill, and I arrived the following afternoon around about 2:30. And the porter on the station said, oh yeah, they're expecting you, he said. Leave your kit here, and he gave me the address, because commandos didn't have barracks in those days. Commandos lived with civilians, and they were paid 6 and 8 pence a day, which included food and lodgings. And they worked arrangements with their own landladies as to what they paid. But so he gave me the address of the troop headquarters, B Troop, this particular one was. So off I went into Bexhill, which was again strange country to me, to find the street that I wanted. I found it all right and reported in to the Sergeant Major, TSM Bob Aylett, and he said, well, he said, we're leaving tonight. So he said, there's no point in trying to find you a billet, because we're not going to be here any longer. He said, so you can come on with me. I'll get the landlady to give you a meal. And then we leave in Bexhill at midnight. Now, I'd never been with a unit